A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel sent us this one. He's fed up with the ritual humiliation of customer service calls. And honestly, who isn't? You call about a billing error, and before you can even state the problem, you've spelled your name 3 times, recited your date of birth, your address, the last 4 of your social, your mother's maiden name, and probably your childhood pet's blood type. And the person on the other end is offered exactly 0 proof of who they are. Daniel's question is, what if you flipped it? What if you recorded the call? What if you demanded they verify their identity before you answered a single question? He wants the full playbook for leveling the playing field against bureaucracy.
I love this question because it's not actually about being difficult. It's about noticing an asymmetry that everyone just accepts as normal and then refusing to accept it. The most subtle indignity of modern life is being asked to prove who you are over and over by people who never have to prove who they are. And the thing is, once you see it, you can't unsee it.
It's a design power imbalance. You're a supplicant before you've even stated your problem. They hold all the information, all the authority, and all the procedural legitimacy. You hold a customer ID number and a growing sense of rage.
And here's what I think Daniel is really getting at. This isn't a rant. This is a tactical problem. If the system runs on procedure, then the person who understands procedure better has the power. So the question becomes, what procedures can you deploy that they don't have a script for?
You've done this.
I have done this, across different institutions, and I've refined it into what I think of as a 3-move sequence. Announce the recording. Demand their verification. Force justification of every question. In that order. Each move builds on the last, and by the time you're through, you're no longer a random caller. You're someone who might cause paperwork.
Let's start with move 1, recording the call. Before anyone hits a button, what's the legal landscape here?
This is where most people get it wrong, and it's important to get it right. Federal law, specifically 18U section 2511 to WTIN, permits what's called one-party consent recording. That means as long as one person on the call consents to the recording, it's legal. And that one person can be you.
In most of the country, you can record without telling anyone.
In 39 states and D. But, and this is crucial, 11 states require all party consent. California, Connecticut, Florida, Illinois, Maryland, Massachusetts, Michigan, Montana, New Hampshire, Pennsylvania, and Washington. If you're in one of those states, or if the person you're calling is in one of those states, you need to inform them.
That's where it gets tricky, because you don't always know where the call center is.
Which is why my recommendation is to announce the recording regardless of where you are. It's not just about legal compliance, it's the power move. The announcement itself is what shifts the dynamic.
Walk me through the script.
Most customer service lines open with an automated message. This call may be recorded for quality and training purposes. You let that play. Then, when the representative comes on and does their greeting, you say, "And I want you to notice the exact phrasing." Before we proceed, I want to let you know that I'll be recording this call for quality control purposes.
You're mirroring their own language back at them.
For quality control purposes. Those 4 words do enormous work. They're the exact words the institution uses to justify recording you. You're not being aggressive. You're not being weird. You're adopting their own stated standard. It creates immediate cognitive dissonance because they have no principled way to object.
Practically, how do you actually record?
On Android, something like CubeACR works well. On iOS, RevCall Recorder is solid, but test it before you need it. Call a friend. Make sure the audio is clear. The last thing you want is to go through this whole sequence and then discover the recording is garbled.
What actually happens when you announce it? What does the rep do?
Most of the time, they pause. There's a silence. Because they have no script for this. Their training covers angry customers, confused customers, customers who want a supervisor. It does not cover a customer who calmly announces they're now operating on equal procedural footing. Some will say, "Okay," and continue. Some will say they need to check with a supervisor. A few will say they're not comfortable being recorded, at which point you say,
I'm not comfortable being recorded either, yet here we are.
That's the line, but you say it calmly. The tone matters more than the words. You're not a complainant, you're an auditor.
You've announced the recording. The call is now documented. What's move two?
Move two is where it gets really interesting. You demand that they verify their identity before you answer a single question.
This is the part where most people would feel rude.
That feeling is exactly what the system relies on. Think about it. They ask for your full name, your address, your date of birth, your mother's maiden name, the last four of your social. They're asking for the keys to your identity. And they've offered zero proof that they are who they say they are. You don't know if you're talking to an actual employee or someone who intercepted the call.
The security argument cuts both ways.
It cuts both ways perfectly. If identity verification is important for security, it should be mutual. They have no principled rebuttal to this. So here's the script. Before I answer your questions, I need to verify your identity. Can you tell me your full name, your employee ID, and the name of your supervisor? I'll note them for the recording.
That's good. I'll note them for the recording. Is the part that makes it land.
It signals that this isn't theoretical. You're building a record. And the employee ID is key. First names are meaningless. I'm speaking with Jennifer tells you nothing. Jennifer, who works in which department? An employee ID number is traceable.
What if they refuse?
Most won't refuse outright. They'll deflect. They'll say they don't have an employee ID, or they're not sure of their supervisor's name. This is almost never true, by the way. Every call center employee has an ID and a reporting structure. But let's say they push back. Your response is, I'm happy to provide my information once you've verified your identity. If you're unable to do that, please transfer me to someone who can.
Now the ball is in their court. They either comply, or they escalate you to someone who will.
Escalation is not a loss. It's a win. The person they escalate to is almost always more experienced, has more authority, and is more likely to actually solve your problem. You've bypassed the first layer of the filter just by asking a question they weren't prepared for.
I want to pause on the psychology here, because I think this is the part people struggle with. They feel like they're being difficult. They feel like they're making some poor call center workers' day worse.
This is a fair concern, and I want to address it directly. The goal is not to make anyone's day worse. The goal is to create a level playing field. You're not being cruel, you're being consistent. If it's reasonable for them to ask for your identity, it's reasonable for you to ask for theirs. If that feels rude, the problem is the norm, not your behavior.
There's a deeper point here too, which is that most of these verification rituals aren't actually legally required. They're inherited procedure. Nobody questioned them, so they persisted.
This brings us to move three, and this is the one that's devastating against government agencies in particular. When they ask for your date of birth or your social security number, you don't refuse. You ask them to justify it.
Give me the script.
Can you tell me why that information is necessary for this call? And can you cite the specific policy or regulation that requires it?
That second sentence is the kill shot. Cite the specific policy or regulation.
Because most of the time, they can't. They're asking because the script tells them to ask. They've never been told why. They've never seen the legal basis. They're operating on institutional muscle memory.
Government agencies are especially vulnerable to this.
The IRS does not require your social security number for all interactions. It requires it for tax return processing, for general inquiries, checking the status of a payment, clarifying a notice, asking about a procedure. They cannot demand it without cause. But try calling the IRS and see how quickly they ask for it.
You say, can you cite the regulation that requires my social security number for this inquiry?
Watch what happens. There will be a pause. Then either they'll back down, or they'll transfer you, or they'll admit they don't know. Any of those outcomes is better than just handing over your SSN because the script asked for it.
There was a case about this, wasn't there? Someone actually sued.
In 2023, a plaintiff sued a major utility company for demanding his social security number during a billing inquiry. The company couldn't produce any legal basis for the requirement. The plaintiff won a $10,000 settlement. $10,000 for asking a question the company couldn't answer.
The legal vulnerability is real. These aren't hypotheticals.
They're not. And it's worth understanding why. Private companies can ask for whatever they want. There's no law saying they can't request your SSN. But if they demand it as a condition of service, and they can't justify the demand, they may be violating consumer protection laws or privacy statutes depending on the jurisdiction. Government agencies have even less wiggle room. They're bound by the Privacy Act of 1974, which requires federal agencies to justify their collection of personal information.
When you ask a federal agency to cite the regulation, you're not just being difficult. You're asking them to comply with a law that already binds them.
You're doing them the favor of reminding them of their legal obligations.
Let's put this all together. Walk me through a full call from beginning to end. Let's say I'm calling a local government tax office about a property tax bill that looks wrong.
The automated message plays, "This call may be recorded for quality assurance." A person picks up.
Thank you for calling the county tax office. This is Brenda. How can I help you?
You say, "Hi, Brenda. Before we proceed, I want to let you know that I'll be recording this call for quality control purposes."
Then, okay, can I get your name and property address?
Before I provide that, I need to verify your identity for my records. Can you tell me your full name, your employee ID number, and the name of your supervisor?
She says, "I'm Brenda Morrison. I don't have my employee ID handy, but my supervisor is Mark."
Can you get that employee ID for me? I'll wait. I want to make sure I have accurate records.
Now she's the one who has to go find something. The dynamic has already shifted.
She comes back with the ID. You note it. Now she asks for your name and address. You provide them. Because you're not refusing to identify yourself, you're insisting on mutual verification. Then she asks for your social security number.
Can you tell me why my social security number is necessary for a property tax inquiry? And can you cite the specific regulation that requires it?
This is where it gets interesting. She might say it's required to access your account. You say, "My name and property address should be sufficient to locate the account. Is there another identifier I can provide? I'm not comfortable sharing my social security number for a billing question."
If she insists.
I understand that's your procedure, but I'm asking about the legal basis. If you can't cite the regulation, I'd like to speak with your supervisor Mark, who you mentioned earlier, to clarify whether this is actually required or just standard practice.
The use of the supervisor's name is a nice touch. It reminds her that you've been taking notes.
That's the whole game. You're not angry, you're not threatening, you're just documenting. Every answer they give becomes part of the record. Every deflection gets noted. You're operating like an auditor because, for the duration of this call, you are one.
What happens at the end of the call? Daniel mentioned one more trick.
This is the closer. They always ask at the end, "Is there anything else I can help you with?" And you say, "Yes." Can you confirm that this call has been recorded on your end as well, and provide me with the recording reference number?
The reference number.
Most call centers assign an internal identifier to recordings. Even if they don't, asking for it signals that you intend to follow up, that you might request that recording later. That this interaction exists in a system somewhere, tied to an identifier, retrievable. It closes the loop and communicates that you are the kind of person who knows paper trails exist.
The full sequence is: announce recording, demand their verification, force justification of every question, and close by requesting their recording reference number.
Three core moves plus the closer. And the order matters. You don't start with the social security number challenge, you build to it. By the time you get there, you've already established that you're recording. You've already verified who you're talking to, and you've already demonstrated that you're procedurally fluent. The SSN challenge lands differently in that context than it would if you opened with it.
What about the objection that this only works in certain situations? That if you're calling Comcast about your internet being down, you're not going to demand their employee ID?
That's fair, and I want to be precise about when to deploy this. The full playbook is for high-stakes calls. Any situation where the institution holds significant power over you and the information they're requesting is sensitive. For a routine technical support call, you probably don't need to demand their supervisor's name, but announcing the recording? That's appropriate for any call. It costs you nothing, and it changes the dynamic immediately.
The tone, you've mentioned this a few times, but I want to underline it. The tone is everything.
You are not a complainant. You are not angry. You are an auditor who does this every day and finds it mildly tedious. The more you sound like you're following a checklist, the more they will treat you as someone who cannot be dismissed with a scripted deflection.
Because auditors generate paperwork, and paperwork is the one thing bureaucracy fears.
Bureaucracy fears paperwork the way vampires fear garlic. It's the one thing that can actually hurt it. A complaint is a feeling. A documented procedural challenge is a liability. It can be escalated. It can be reviewed. It can become a finding. It can become a lawsuit, as we saw with that $10,000 settlement.
You're not fighting the system. You're feeding the system its own food and watching it choke.
That's the entire philosophy. Don't argue with bureaucracy. Don't appeal to its better nature. It doesn't have one. Just hand it a mirror and ask it to explain what it sees.
I want to go back to the legal piece for a moment, because I think some listeners will be nervous about this. What's the actual risk if you record without announcing in a two-party consent state?
It varies by state, but in several of them, it's a criminal violation. California treats illegal recording as a potential misdemeanor. Florida makes it a felony in certain circumstances. This is not something to be cavalier about. If you're in a two-party consent state, announce. If you're not sure, announce. The announcement is the power move anyway, so you're not losing anything by doing it.
What about the other side of the call? If you're calling a company that's based in a one-party consent state, but you're in a two-party consent state, which law applies?
This is genuinely unsettled in some circuits, and it's one of those areas where the law hasn't fully caught up with the reality of interstate telecommunications. The safest approach is to assume the stricter standard applies. Announce the recording. It protects you legally, and it advances your tactical position. There's no downside.
The legal advice is, just announce it, everywhere, always.
And the practical advice is, know your state's classification. If you live in California, Connecticut, Florida, Illinois, Maryland, Massachusetts, Michigan, Montana, New Hampshire, Pennsylvania, or Washington, you are in a two-party consent state and you must announce. If you're anywhere else, you can record silently, but you shouldn't, because the announcement is the point.
I want to talk about the identity verification piece specifically with government agencies, because I think that's where this is most powerful and least understood. Most people assume that if a government employee asks for your social security number, they must need it. That's not true.
It's absolutely not true. The Privacy Act of 1974 requires federal agencies to inform you whether providing your social security number is mandatory or voluntary, what law authorizes them to request it, and what will happen if you refuse. Most agencies ignore this requirement entirely. They just ask and people comply because the person asking sounds official.
When you ask them to cite the regulation, you're essentially asking them to comply with a law they're already violating by not telling you about.
And this is why the question is so effective. You're not making up a new requirement. You're asking them to follow the existing one. They can't argue with it because it's the law. They can only admit they don't know it, which is itself a useful admission.
Let's say someone is listening to this and they want to try it. What's the minimum viable version? The version for someone who's nervous about confrontation.
The minimum viable version is one move. Announce the recording. That's it. Just say, before we proceed, I want to let you know I'll be recording this call for quality control purposes. You don't have to do anything else. That one sentence changes the entire interaction. It signals that you're procedurally aware, it creates a record, and it costs you nothing.
If that goes well, you can add move 2 next time.
Build the muscle. The first time you demand someone's employee ID, it feels strange. By the third time, it feels natural. By the 10th time, you're doing it without thinking, and you're getting better results on every call because you're no longer starting from a position of supplication.
There's something almost therapeutic about this. It's not just about getting better customer service. It's about refusing to be made small by systems that are designed to make you small.
And I think that's what Daniel is getting at in his prompt. It's not just tactics. It's dignity. The system treats you like a supplicant because it's designed to. Refusing that role is itself the victory, regardless of whether your billing issue gets resolved.
Though ideally, the billing issue also gets resolved.
And in my experience, it usually does, because the person who gets transferred to the specialist is the person who gets their problem solved. The person who just answers all the questions and hopes for the best is the person who gets told, "We'll look into it," and never hears back.
You've recorded the call. You've verified their identity. You force them to justify every question. What does this look like as a repeatable system?
I think of it as a single page you could print and keep by your phone. At the top, know your state's consent law. Then the three moves in order, and the closer requests their recording reference number. That's it. Four sentences, practiced until they feel natural, deployed in sequence.
The script for each move is short enough to memorize.
Before we proceed, I want to let you know that I'll be recording this call for quality control purposes. That's move one. Before I answer your questions, I need to verify your identity. Can you tell me your full name, your employee ID, and the name of your supervisor? I'll note them for the recording. That's move two. Can you tell me why that information is necessary for this call? And can you cite the specific policy or regulation that requires it? That's move three. And at the end, can you confirm that this call has been recorded on your end as well and provide me with the recording reference number?
That's the whole playbook.
Four sentences and a calm tone of voice. That's all it takes to go from supplicant to auditor.
I'm curious about the long game here. What happens when enough people start doing this? Do the scripts change? Do call centers start preemptively verifying themselves?
I think about this a lot. The optimistic answer is that institutions adapt by becoming more transparent. If every fifth caller demands to know the legal basis for the SSN request, eventually the institution either finds a legal basis or drops the request. Either outcome is an improvement.
The pessimistic answer?
They route you to a special queue for difficult callers and make you wait longer. But honestly, that's already happening. The people who push back already get different treatment. The question is whether that treatment is better or worse, and in my experience, it's better. The specialist who handles escalated calls is more competent than the first-line rep. The supervisor who gets called over has more authority to actually fix things. You're not being punished, you're being promoted.
Bureaucracy runs on unexamined procedure. The only way to fix it is to force examination. Every call where you demand justification is a tiny act of institutional reform.
You don't need to win every time. You just need to ask the question. The question itself is the intervention. Even if they can't answer it, even if they transfer you, even if nothing gets resolved, you've introduced the idea that their procedures are not self-justifying, that someone noticed, that someone asked.
All right, so if someone tries this and gets a memorable result, good or bad, what should they do?
Send it to us. We'll do a follow-up episode of the best and worst outcomes. I want to hear what happens when people deploy this in the wild. The utility company lawsuit started because someone asked a question and didn't accept a non-answer. These things can snowball.
If you try it and it goes terribly, send that too. Those are usually the funnier stories.
The failures are often more instructive than the successes. I once had a representative simply hang up on me after I announced the recording, which, in its own way, was useful information about that company.
What did you do?
Called back, got a different representative, announced the recording again, and had a perfectly productive call. The first rep's reaction told me more about the company culture than anything they could have said.
Even the failures are data.
Everything is data. That's the auditor's mindset. You're not trying to win an argument. You're gathering information about how the system responds to being treated the way it treats you.
Now, Hilbert's Daily Fun Fact.
In 1902, a lichenologist in the cloud forests of Honduras discovered that the vivid yellow pigment in the lichen Telaschistes flavicans is produced by anthraquinone compounds that the fungal partner synthesizes only when growing at elevations above 2,000 meters, the same chemistry used in traditional textile dyes by the Lenca people for centuries.
That's a good word.
I have no follow-up questions, and I mean that as a compliment.
Here's the open question I'm left with. We've talked about what happens when one person does this, but what happens when it becomes common knowledge? When the scripts spread and institutions have to contend with a population that knows how to push back? Does customer service get better, or does it just get weirder?
I think it gets better in the specific and weirder in the aggregate. Individual calls become more productive, but the system as a whole starts to develop antibodies, new scripts, new deflection tactics, new ways to reassert the asymmetry. It's an arms race, and the only way to stay ahead is to keep asking the questions they haven't scripted for yet.
The playbook will need updating.
It will always need updating. That's the nature of the thing. But the core principle doesn't change. Refuse to be a supplicant. Make them justify what they ask of you. Everything else is just tactics.
If you try this and get a result worth sharing, email the show at show@myweirdprompts.com. We want the successes, the failures, and especially the moments where the representative just went silent for 10 seconds.
Thanks to Hilbert Flumingtop for producing. This has been My Weird Prompts. I'm Herman Poppleberry.
I'm Korn. Don't let the bureaucracy win.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth's slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The hosts dig in, the hosts dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.